Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show with your morning show hosts, Julie Calamine, that's me, and my co-host, Phil Huff. Good morning, Phil.
Well, good morning, Julie. How are you?
I'm really great. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing fine. It's summertime. It's July, and lots of markers of summer, but usually July 1 is one of them because right around the corner is July 4.
That's true. And it usually begins a sunny, sunny period for us here in Idaho.
This week seems to be breaking that rule.
It's true. It rained at my house this morning, Phil.
Oh, well, we weren't so lucky, although we could use some more. Things are a little dry.
That's right. Well, I'm going to give us a short weather report, and then we're going to introduce our guests. And it's all about 4th of July and parties, etc., tours. It's going to be a great morning.
Yeah, that's the first half. And then we're going to be talking gardening, which hopefully we get a little more rain and a little more sun because my tomatoes are slow to start.
My tomatoes are dismal, but we'll get to that a little later. Meanwhile, the weather today here in Sandpoint is for scattered showers, then showers likely. Sounds showery. A 60% chance of rain. We're looking at a high of 76 degrees and tonight a low of 51 degrees. Wednesday, sort of the same thing, chance of showers, although the photo on the weather report shows big thunderclouds instead of steady rain clouds. And then that's a 40% chance with a high of 74. Wednesday night, it's sort of the same thing, partly cloudy. And Phil, on and on, chance of showers right up until Saturday. So I'm not sure we're going to have a sunny 4th of July coming.
Well, as long as the rains hold off during the parade and fireworks, a little rain doesn't hurt.
But, no, it doesn't.
But the Tuesday morning show forecast for the Tuesday before the 4th of July is usually to find someone from the Lions Club in our seats, at least at the top of the hour, and that's the case today.
We have fulfilled our forecast. Yeah. Let's introduce our guests.
We are fortunate once again to have from the Sandpoint Lions Club Frank Visger, the immediate past president. I think only recently in the last day dethroned.
Morning, Frank.
but still with us. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning.
And with Frank is Rhonda Whitaker, the first vice president of the Lions Club. Good morning, Rhonda.
Good morning, Phil.
And welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Who's the second vice president? Oh, there is none.
There is Janice Rader.
All right. Mm-hmm. So there actually is. How about a third, though?
No third.
No third. All right.
Yeah. Well, and while we're taking the tour of the officers, the incoming president is Howard Shea.
That is correct.
Yeah. And so it's really quite an active group, and it's wonderful that you all do so much for the community. And I think one of the things that this conversation might be misleading and maybe a good place to start is that for the amount of impact that the Lions Club has, it's not a very large group.
No, we only have about 27 members.
So tell us a little bit more about the local Lions Club.
Well, the Lions Club originally was founded by a group of Chicago businessmen back in the 1920s, and they were challenged by Helen Keller to work with the blind, and that has been the main focus of the Lions Club. And this Lions Club also, but in addition to that, we do a number of things locally. Throughout the year, we do the Easter egg hunt, and of course the 4th of July, which we're going to talk about. We also do Halloween and Toys for Tots. And then generally every 2 to 3 years, depending on the availability of the equipment, we do a sight and hearing screening at the local elementary schools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that people maybe in the younger or the millennial group don't necessarily think of the Lions Club as, organization that deals with hearing and sight. It's good to remind folks of that. It really is.
Yeah, that's really our primary mission.
Mm-hmm. And the activities around that are fundraisers and events that help raise the awareness of the Lions Club.
That's correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very good.
So it's a worldwide organization that started in the 30s, as you said. How did it spread to Sandpoint? How did it come here?
Well, that's a little bit before my time, but the club has been here since the early 1950s, about 1953, and it was founded by a group of Sandpoint businessmen. Mm-hmm. And basically started the 4th of July celebration, which I understand in the 1960s.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So it's been a long time.
Well, I was going to say that. It has been here a long time, and it's been a very stable influence on the community for all those years.
So the 1960s, do we know you've probably passed the 50th anniversary then of the parade?
Yeah, I'd say we're getting closer to the 60th.
Closing right in on it. So how did that tradition start? Where did that begin?
Well, again, it's my understanding of the members got together and said, mm-hmm. let's have a party in Dead City Beach, and let's have fireworks and the local parade also. And then it's basically stayed, I think, the same, obviously gotten bigger, but that's the origin.
And Frank, had other Lions clubs been doing 4th of July celebrations for some time before that? Is that a typical Lions Club event?
Not that I'm aware of. I think Sandpoint is lucky that we're unique and we do
yes.
that.
Yes. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's pretty neat.
And Rhonda, you're very involved with the parade, this year's parade, is that right?
Yes, that's correct. That's one mm-hmm. of the main tasks for the second vice president. We rotate officers to give everybody, all the members, a chance to get a full awareness of what these events that we organize and coordinate. So yes, it was my first time.
And we'll want to talk a little bit about what to expect tomorrow for people who might be new to the area or just need a refresher. But there's so much work that goes into it. Give us a general description of just all of the work that needs to go into putting on the parade.
Well, we start off by getting permits to have the parade. Because 5th Street is a highway, we have to go through the Idaho Department of Transportation and work in coordination with the city of Sandpoint and traffic control issues. So that is the first thing that needs to be coordinated. And we just move forward with getting our grand prizes in order and selling raffle tickets for pretty good part of the summer for our members. So,
and tell us how the raffle tickets relate to the event.
Well, the Lions Club purchases the grand prize, and we also pay for the fireworks. So all of our raffle funds go towards those efforts each year. Mm-hmm. The Sandpoint Lions Club is a very small club, and it takes a lot to put something like that on, and it's getting more and more expensive every year. So we really encourage people to buy those raffle tickets. The grand prizes are great. This year we went with the Sea-Doo, so we get out there in the water as a trailer, and always our second prize is the $2,000 Bonner County shopping spree, and the third prize is $1,000 cash. So, come on out there and support the club, and we work really hard to make sure that all the participants stay safe. And
mm-hmm. And Rhonda, people obviously are still able to buy the raffle tickets. Where can they find them?
We sell raffle tickets throughout the city of different places. This morning we'll be at Co-op. I think that tomorrow we'll be at Walmart. And then we will be selling tickets throughout the 4th of July day, right up until just shortly before we do the drawing and light off the fireworks on the 4th.
Okay, so the drawing happens right before the fireworks display.
Yes, ma'am.
That's an exciting event to turn up for. You might win a raffle ticket.
Either way, you might win
a big prize either way, and you get to see the 4th of July
so the
fireworks.
Raffle tickets are the primary way that you bring in the money to help support the event, but it takes a lot of volunteers. Tell us a little bit more about how you bring together that human capacity to put things on.
Well, we're so very fortunate to have the Bonner County Amateur Radio group, and then we have the Elks, and so they help us with safety issues, just to kind of keep an eye on everything that's going on. The Elks will help us to keep everyone hydrated, hopefully on the hot day, and they have radio contact with us so that everybody mm-hmm. can coordinate to keep everyone safe. So that's part of the volunteers, and then our members really get in there and do all the rest.
That is truly a kind of a sign of a Sandpoint activity or event. People, folks, and organizations collaborating, isn't mm-hmm. it? So the Elks are helping out the Lions, and I imagine you help them out at times.
Yeah, and in addition, of course, we work very closely with the Sandpoint Police Department and Fire Department, both during the parade and all day at City Beach and mm-hmm. during the fireworks.
So tell us about the parade route, and what to expect in terms of participants in the parade, what people will view.
We'll begin the festivities with the children's parade. That'll That'll shoot off at 9 o'clock in the morning. And that will begin at the parking lot there at 3rd Avenue and Church Street, as it usually does. Officer Corey Coons will lead the children's parade, and it'll start exactly at 9. We need to get through that. And the parade will begin at 10 o'clock. The children's parade is just around the block, so it starts there on 3rd Avenue. It'll go around to 2nd Avenue, to Main Street, and just around that parking lot. Mm-hmm. They have really a lot of fun. And just need to let people know that 5th Avenue will be closed at about 8:45, and that will set the pace for everything. And
all right. And can any child participate, or is it children's groups? Who attends that parade?
Any child may participate, and it's very fun. That was what I did last year to help with the parade, is organize the children's parade. And Janice Rader will be doing that this year. The kids just love it. They dress up. They decorate their bikes. It just is a really fun time for them, and they just feel big because they have their very own parade.
It's a great kickoff for the day.
Mm-hmm. And they're the first ones. That's great.
Yep.
So great. Tell us about the parade that follows then.
The parade that follows will be stationing up in the Bazaar parking lot this year. We usually have a different space for that, but it's just going to be right across the street, and we'll be able to form everything just fine. People usually start showing up at about 7:30 or so to get started, and make sure you get your number for the parade, and everything will be all set up with the registration area there, and get everybody lined up. We have our members that are volunteer to make sure that runs smoothly, mm-hmm. and sets it off.
And so the groups or individuals participating in the parade need to pre-register in advance. Can they register the day of?
Frank, yes. Frank's shaking his head, so they can. Visual. It's throughout the last month or so, usually they kind of come in at the last minute. But yes, you can. We will have a register desk right there, and you can register at that time.
Up until what time?
We'd prefer that they pre-register.
Yeah.
But, I would think so.
Yeah, because we have to get that information down to the judges and so on. So we'd like to have them all registered and so on, you know, have all their paperwork there as early as they can in the morning. Right. We'll have somebody there at 7.
And so, any group that would like to join can join, more or less, or not necessarily?
Well, it's a celebratory parade, and we're trying to keep it in that theme.
Sure, that makes sense.
Draw us up, for someone, again, who's new to the area. We have a lot of listeners who, I think, tune in just to find out more about Sandpoint. What's the parade experience like? Tell us a little bit about what they'll see.
Go ahead, Frank.
They'll see everything from veterans groups to logging trucks to and everything in between. And that's part of the, I guess we could call it the ambiance of the parade. And it's all locals and very informal. And that's what, it's a small town group, and that's what makes it unique.
That's right. Yeah. Do individuals enter, or is it usually groups?
Usually groups, but you'll get a range.
Sure.
That's a fabulous, for people who haven't experienced it before, the fabulous small town parade. I think there's almost as many people in it as there are lining the sidewalks watching it.
It seems like that sometimes.
And there's a lot of people lining the sidewalks. Have you ever done an estimate of how many people show up for it?
No, actually not.
I can tell you, having walked through, I've tried to count, and it's mind-boggling after the first few thousand, but
yeah,
it's certainly in the thousands.
Several thousand.
And Frank and Rhonda, should folks plan to bring their own water and snacks, or will there be concessions that they might find?
I would advise everyone to bring their own snacks and water. The businesses in town will be open. The town is pretty active all day. The parade ends at about noon, and everybody heads down to the beach with all their picnic baskets and fun. It's a wonderful place to just hang out for the day and enjoy the lake. And we'll be stationed down there also selling tickets and just, in anticipation of the wonderful fireworks show that we're going to be having.
Yes, and to get your spot for the fireworks, get your blanket laid down.
And so tell us, how did the fireworks start the same year as the parade back in the 60s, or is that added on later?
As far as we know, yes. Yeah.
So it's always been a whole big day celebration.
Yes, it's been those two are the main things. And I think the fireworks were originally over by Memorial Field.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's been a number of years that it moved to City Beach, but yeah, things have moved around a little bit, but it's pretty much stayed the same.
That's right. And
what time does the show start? The fireworks at dark, probably, right?
Yeah, it's basically up to the shooter, but generally around dusk, getting pretty close to 10 o'clock usually. Now, if it's cloudy out, that may change a little bit. But,
okay.
Yeah.
Is there anything unusual planned for this year's fireworks display?
Well, hopefully not too unusual.
Predictability is a good thing with fireworks, but it draws a big crowd too. Any tips or hints or suggestions regarding access, parking, that sort of thing?
Well, you want to get down there fairly early because the city, I believe, closes it as far as ingress and egress, what, about 7 o'clock, 6, 8 o'clock in that neighborhood. So once you're in, you're in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you don't want to show up at 8:45 with your car.
Yeah, you can't just bumble in right before the start and expect to leave right after. It's a big event.
Well, if you're walking, you probably can, but if you're driving, no.
Well, and we just have to remember that Sandpoint is a walking town.
That's
so
right.
You have, you're in walking distance with pretty much anything that you really need to do throughout the day. So that's a wonderful thing right there.
That is a good point. If you can get your car parked somewhere safe, you can just leave it there on that day.
And I think, you know, from past shows with people from the Lions Club on, it would be nice to hear a little bit about how the facility at City Beach came about. That was a Lions Club project, too, quite some number of years ago.
Yeah, basically, it was the same group of businessmen that got together and started working on City Beach and turning it into, you know, more or less to the facility that it is today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Creating it and bringing in the materials and really building it out.
That's right.
Yeah. So the community owes quite a large debt of gratitude and thanks to not only putting on the parade and the fireworks show, but literally building the facilities at which it's being held.
You know what? I just have to say that I have always been very impressed on how the community really gets together and supports this, because actually it is funded by the community buying the raffle tickets. We also get donations, and I'd like to say a shout out to some of our platinum sponsors and people that sponsor every year. And Idaho Forest Group came through this year, and we're really excited. There are platinum sponsors this year. Ben Stein gives a donation every year. We receive donations from Pierce Auto, Schweitzer, Conoco, Kachava chipped in this year, Percussionaire, White Cross, and just those are just to name a few people that we really appreciate all those donations. And like I said, the community at large puts us on.
Yeah. And a nice diverse group, isn't it, of folks across the community. It's good to see that.
Very local businesses, organizations, and people. And speaking of people, and we've mentioned volunteers, do you still need volunteers?
We're pretty well fixed for the 4th. We've got a group now that's pretty well trained.
But it's an ongoing thing, so...
Yeah, and no, and other times of the year, definitely for the Halloween and Toys for Tots, Easter, and so on, we certainly like to use volunteers. And also, if we can get any new members, we'd love to have them.
And so do you have contact information for how people can find out more about becoming a member of the Lions Club or volunteering for the projects, or both?
Well, we have our club meetings twice a month, the 2nd and the 4th Tuesday of each month.
What?
Oh, it's Monday. Excuse me. The Mondays. And we're located at 609 South Ella Street. We're right next to the museum there. You can always mail us. Our P.O. box is 414 Sandpoint. You may call us 263-4118. We have an email, sandpointlions@gmail.com. And visit us on our website, Sandpoint Lions Club. Just use the drop down to eClubhouse and you can find a little bit more information and like us on Facebook.
Wow, lots of ways to engage with the Lions here locally.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it is an organization that does a lot in our community. I've participated with the Christmas toy event, and it takes a lot of volunteers. I know that's not our focus today, but you certainly need lots of folks to help with that.
Yeah, that Christmas toy event is also about feeding the community. There's the whole boxing up of the Christmas dinners.
Yeah, and that's probably our most volunteer-heavy event right there. And we use them, and we appreciate it very much.
And it's very satisfying, isn't it, Phil?
The spirit of many seasons. So we're running a little long time. We have a few minutes. Anything that you would like to suggest to listeners that they should know about, prepare for, tips and tricks for how best to manage the 4th?
Well, just one thing. I don't know if we covered it. We're back to our regular parade route this year. Last year was shortened up because of the construction. For our parade route this year, again, it'll kick off at 5th and Church, and then it basically goes down Church, 1st Street, over 1st Street to Cedar, and then on Cedar back to 5th.
Okay, oh, nice. So and, quite a few spots for folks to gather.
So it's the great big horseshoe loop through downtown.
Yeah, it's we're back to the regular horseshoe, and we'd ask any participants once they get to the dispersal point at the end of the parade to kind of move out of the way so the rest of so the parade doesn't choke on itself. We've had little problems with that in the last few years. But, and again, if you want to get down to City Beach and get a parking place fairly close, you want to get down there fairly early.
And for the parade, if you want a good viewing spot and you want a decent parking, you need to get there early also. And parking afterwards, parking can be tricky, and dispersal afterwards takes a while. So I'd also suggest people bring some patience.
Yes, good we point. Can do with patience.
And food, so they don't get hungry and upset.
Water, avoid dehydration. It'll be a hot day.
Rhonda.
And I just say keep an eye on the children and yourselves to stay on the sidewalk and not get into the street. We don't want to march with the parade. We don't want anybody falling. We want everybody to be safe. Keep your animals tethered, and just make sure to stay hydrated if it's a hot day.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
Very good. Very good suggestions.
Well, Frank Visger and Rhonda Whitaker of the Sandpoint Lions Club, I want to thank you for joining us here on KRFY for the Tuesday morning show. We've gotten a lot of information about the Big 4th event. Thank you.
Looking forward to it, as always. Thank you for putting it on.
You're very welcome.
It's my pleasure.
We're going to take a song break and then be back with another exciting event coming in the next week. And we'll take our break and listen to Bruce Springsteen, a personal request from our Lions Club folks, with Born in the USA. And that was Bruce Springsteen with Born in the USA. Perfect song for today's topics.
Yeah, and for the day the USA was born, July 4th.
That's right. Well, for those of you just joining us, this is KRFY, listener-supported community radio for the Idaho Panhandle. This is Julie Calamine, one of the two hosts for the Tuesday morning show. And I'm here with Phil Huff, who's on his way back after collecting raffle tickets for the Lions Club event. The raffle, and we're all hoping we'll win that jet ski item, aren't we, Phil?
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are. Well, in the meantime, I'm going to introduce our next guests this morning, and we're so lucky to have them. We've got two gals from the Bonner County Gardeners Association, Janae Dale. Good morning, Janae.
Hi.
And Ann Warwick. Hi, Ann.
Hi.
So glad that you could join us to talk about another upcoming event, a very exciting one. Janae, what's happening on this coming Sunday?
Well, we're having our annual garden tour, and so we're very excited to be able to come in and let everybody know about it so they can attend.
It's kind of a big event, isn't it? Lots of planning goes into it. You've got to find gardeners who are willing to host a horde of people to walk through and visit their gardens.
Yes, it is. We work on it pretty much all year, looking for gardens and hoping that people will suggest gardens that they think will be great for the garden tour, and then put it together. It takes quite a bit of organizing to get it all set up.
That's right. Why don't you tell us about the where and when, and then I'm going to back up and ask you to give us a bit of history and mission about the Gardeners Association.
Well, the garden tour is this Sunday, and it's from 10 in the morning till 5 in the afternoon. So people can make it around, have plenty of time to make it around to see every garden. The tickets are $15 a piece, and they're available at any one of the gardens. So that's usually the best way to pick them up is to, and we'll have signage all around town. All best right. way to pick up the tickets is to go to one of the gardens and buy your tickets there.
It's an easy way to start.
Yes.
Why don't you tell us a bit about how you came to be Bonner County Gardeners, Janae and also Ann?
Well, I have been a gardener, and when I retired, was able to have more time to finally get in and do some gardening. We moved here from the Seattle area gardening is quite a bit different. So I had lived in Eastern Washington. It's more similar to what I did in Eastern Washington. But coming here, I needed to learn more about how to garden in North Idaho.
Yes. And Anne, what about you? How did you come to the association?
Well, I took the Master Gardener course in 1996. Everybody that's in our organization has taken the Master Gardener course. And I just sort of stuck with it. And here we are today, many years later.
There's so much to know and learn. And I think I'm a neophyte gardener, but even from my perspective, adapting to the things that occur, the wide range of situations in North Idaho, you know, for instance, this year, everything seems to be off to a bit slower start. And so, you know, I know our listeners would love some specific tips on that, but in general, just, you know, how do you manage that wide range of situations?
Well, I believe it was Diane Green that made the comment that gardening in North Idaho, the weather in North Idaho is the coldest, warmest, driest, wettest place to have a garden. And if you can accept that, then you can garden here. So you have to be pretty flexible and stay aware of what's going on around you.
And Diane Green should know. She's the owner, proprietor of Green Tree Natural. She's a real expert on gardening
so
in the area.
That's really about adapting your expectations more than adapting your garden. But that's an important thing, too.
Yes.
Well, one thing about gardening is it's a lifelong learning experience, which is what I really appreciate about it.
Very definitely. When I did take the Master Gardener course, when I did take the training in 2003, I only learned that I didn't know very much.
So tell us what's growing well in your garden this season.
Oh, well, my flower garden's looking quite nice. It's kind of isolated. I'm the only person who looks at it, but I'm appreciating it.
And what's working well for you this year, Janae?
Pardon?
What's happening in your garden that you're happy about?
Well, the flowers have been really great. They've been a little slow to come on, but they just have been really spectacular. I've planted quite a few new things. I did lots of annuals from seed this year, and that's been fun and very rewarding.
That talking about flowers does bring us back around to the garden tour, which I'd like to get to again. And I understand this year it's happening mainly in town. Is that true?
Yes. We usually try to, when we're planning the garden tour and selecting gardens, we usually try to keep them within a common area so that people don't have to travel quite so far. If they're far out of town, then we try and have most all the gardens in that same area. So there's not such long driving in between gardens. And this year they are all in the Sandpoint area. So.
And how many are there?
We have 8 gardens on, on the tour this year. Mm-hmm. One public garden, which is the Sandpoint Community Garden, and all the rest are private residences.
Can you tell us a little bit about each?
Well, we have 2 instances in which they are next door neighbors.
Oh,
so
good.
That's going to be nice. Those are out on Creekside Lane and Browning Way out by the athletic club. And then we have a beautiful one that is owned by one of our members. And
Do they have themes, Anne? Can you tell us about what
themes,
we might expect
yes.
to see at each one?
Well, one of them has a lot of birdhouses on display, including a birdhouse made by a grandchild, which resembles the old mill here in town.
Mm-hmm. Neat.
And they're very, very proud of that because the grandchild made it. Most of them involve flowers and landscaping. The community garden may be the exception, with it being mostly vegetables. All in all, I think people will enjoy the tour because it is close around town, and they can take their time at each garden.
Sure.
The community garden is a little bit unique in that, of course, it's not an individual homeowner's garden, but so many of the community members have garden plots in there, and I'm sure that most people have driven by and seen the community gardens, but to have the opportunity to park the car, get out, and walk through them it's really worthwhile. You get to see up close what people are doing, and each bed is so unique because they're done by different people. So,
and there'll be someone there to show them around, a docent, as it were.
Yeah, it will be worth the time to stop and see it.
Yes, there are volunteers that help folks find their route through each garden.
Yes.
Disclosure, I know that because I'm helping out with one this year.
Yes, we try and have hosts and hostesses at each garden so that the homeowner can sit and relax. In fact, the homeowner could even be gone if they choose to not put up with the crowds.
Oh, so you could just pick someone's home who's gone and do a tour.
Yeah. Hey, what an idea.
Kind of a pirate tour.
There we go. Well, not quite. There will be the volunteers.
No, but it's a nicer way to actually get to know someone's landscaping and find out the thought that went in behind it and see the effect rather than peering over the fence and wondering. You have someone there to answer questions.
Yes, there'll be somebody there to answer questions and help identify different plants if you see something you really like. We try and make sure that you will know what kind of plant it is, so it might be something you want to try in your own garden.
So someone who's listening who says, boy, this sounds good, how do they start? Do they sign up somewhere in advance, buy tickets in advance?
No, you just go to one of the gardens, and we have flyers around town, and it is being advertised in both the newspaper and the co-op roundup and several other places.
And show up at one of the locations?
And here.
Okay.
And if they wanted to go online and see where the first house that they might want to see would be, can they do that? Can they visit your website?
Yes. It is bcgardeners.org.
Very easy. BC, just BC. Yes. Not BCGA. Okay. No. All right. Good. Janae, I've been to, I guess, three of the garden tours now. And one thing that I've noticed, and you just began to touch on it, is that there's often so many of the gardens combine an edible component with an ornamental component, and I've always found that very interesting. Should we hope to see more of that this year?
Oh, I'm sure there will be, yes, beyond the community gardens themselves. More and more people are doing their own vegetable growing and trying different ones, particularly tomatoes. Those seem to always be a big favorite, but yes, sometimes the edibles are included in the flower beds. Other times people will have raised beds in a separate area where they're growing their vegetables for their own consumption and for the food bank. And there should be quite a bit of that.
Yeah, who doesn't love a good homegrown tomato compared to what you get in the grocery stores these days? But
so true.
I want to know, which place is growing the grapes for wine.
Is there one? Will there be a wine growing
sure.
one this year?
We do have a wine garden this year.
Or hops, Phil, for beer.
We need to think about planting one, Julie, and inviting people in.
It would have to include hops, though.
Yeah.
Yes. We have different favorites, Phil and I.
So the history of this has been going on for how long?
It started in 2002.
2002. And is it growing some every year? It sounds like it's getting more and more involved.
I think we had 200 people last year, so we're expecting about the same amount.
It's a big crowd.
We try to have it on a different weekend than the Coeur d'Alene garden tour. One year we did have it at the same weekend, and the people in Coeur d'Alene let us know that they really like coming to ours, so they wanted it on a separate weekend.
So you're collecting funds from folks that see the garden tour. Are they used for anything in particular?
Yes, we have quite a few things that we try and use our finances for. Probably the main one that is an ongoing one are the school gardens. We're helping out with the school gardens. We just recently were in the process, in fact, of making some more compost bins. One of our members has made compost bins for the school gardens.
I think we should send a shout out to Howie right now, shouldn't we, to thank him?
Definitely. Absolutely. Howie Fenimore has been the fellow who has done our compost bins quite regularly. He's a great help.
And they're beautiful compost bins.
They are.
There's a new one at the Sagal Elementary School that looks just perfect. I'm so impressed with it.
Well, it's so valuable for the students to learn about compost as well, to see where all these things you throw away turn into this magic soil.
So it's a full cycle with the school gardens. The students get to see the planting, the raising, the harvesting, and the composting.
Yes, yes. And some mm-hmm. of them have school summer programs where the students are able to come in mm-hmm. during the summer and work on the gardens, and others mm-hmm. keep it pretty much to the school year.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the other programs that the Bonner County Gardeners work on?
Our primary mission is education.
Mm-hmm.
So we also have, we do teach the Master Gardener course every winter, and we have two series of home horticulture classes, one in the spring, one in the fall, that are open to the public on a variety of topics. We also have a presence in beautification around town. We did quite a project at the fairgrounds a couple years ago, and this year we're going to have a presence on the Cedar Street Bridge with a project that we're doing there.
Oh, tell us more about that.
Well, it's going to be a planter that children can look at. It's going to have, a view of the roots as well as the upper part of the plant. It's going to be an educational project mm-hmm. somewhere on the Cedar Street Bridge.
Wow, that's a great project.
Yeah.
We're also looking at some other beautification projects around town, some places where we can help with the community and have something growing, or like the beanstalk bench that's in the farm and park. Hmm. We put mm-hmm. that in. So
lots of education for adults and kids. But there's another component to the Bonner County Gardeners, and that's a social component.
Definitely. One of our major points is camaraderie, and it's fascinating when you get a group of gardeners together because they talk nonstop about everything that's going on in their garden, what is working, what isn't working, and share that knowledge, and it's always a really great exchange, very social, lots of fun.
It really is. Potlucks and get-togethers, and they're not just about the potlucks. They add to the educational component of the association.
Definitely, yes.
Well, visiting somebody else's garden always gives one ideas for their own.
And so if someone wants to get involved again, the website is probably the best way? And that
probably,
address one more
yes.
time?
Yes.
The address for the website one more time?
bcgardeners.org.
Okay.
All right. And how about the other details joining the tour and the times, et cetera? Let's have another summary in case people are just joining us.
Well, the tour is Sunday, July 7th, 10 to 5. And it is $15 per person. And you can buy a ticket at any garden. Included in the ticket is a map to all the other gardens.
There'll be signs too. We put up signs to guide people to each one of the gardens, so you can usually find your way around pretty well.
All right. Well, something to look forward to on Sunday, Phil.
Yes.
Hope it's a nice day Sunday.
Oh, I hope so. I hope so. The weather report looks like Saturday is the next sunny day, so hopefully Sunday will follow
with
another beauty.
We have had umbrellas before. It didn't stop the crowds.
No, it'd be nice to kick off summer by then, but we need some rain for the growing. We need a little more sunshine for the growing, too. I think that's been part of what has made my garden struggle.
Yes. Well, one last comment about the tour, and it is similar to the Lions Club parade and 4th of July fireworks. People should bring snacks and beverages and plan to stay hydrated, I would think.
Definitely.
We do provide water. We have water at every garden.
Very good. But nonetheless, good to be prepared because it with the number of gardens and the stopping and walking, you do kind of need to pack a bit of a picnic. Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, I want to thank Janae Dale and Ann Warwick of the Bonner County Gardeners Association for coming in and talking with us about your upcoming event, really your biggest event of the year for the public, and it sounds like another great one. Thank you both.
It was our pleasure to come. Yeah. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for joining.
All right. Thank you, Ann. Thank you, Janae. Well, we're going to take a song break, guys, and I think this one will be related to gardening. Phil and I selected Ricky Nelson's original version of Garden Party. So enjoy that, and we'll be back with upcoming events, etc.